Now you should listen to this, because this concerns you.
Hello, friends and neighbors. It's me. It's your podcast buddy, Dave. Dave Slusher. This is the Evil Genius Chronicles. It is August 25th, 2006. This is show number 178. And I want to thank you for being here. I am back. I have missed you. I'm your friend, but I'm a bad friend. I've been away for a long time. I haven't been calling you enough. I haven't been around. And there's a sad story, but I'm not going to get to it just as of yet. First, the business. The music you're listening to is The Gentle Readers. They're at gentlereaders.com. I absolutely love these people as musicians, as humans, as entities that have walked the face of this planet. The Gentle Readers, they're at gentlereaders.com. This show is Creative Commons licensed, non-commercial attribution. The show is not work safe, probably not kid safe. Be warned. Forewarned is forearmed. And so it's been the month of August 2006 has been unbelievably miserable. It's been horrible. This might be the worst summer ever, even though good things have happened, like this new job, which I, in fact, really like, and, you know, it's good money and everything like that, but it's just been a horrible, horrible year. And, you know, before I even tell the sad story, I think I'm going to start off with a sad song. I'm always a sucker for a sad song anyway, and particularly when things are shitty. So this is a song by a artist named Kathy McCarty, although she often bills herself as Kay McCarty, kind of like that R. Crumb thing. So it's Kathy McCarty from an album called Dead Dog's Eyeball. If you're familiar with Daniel Johnston, even if you didn't know him before, there's this movie out called The Devil and Daniel Johnston. He's kind of a very odd, you know, what would you call it? He's like the Howard Finster of music. What's the name for that? Naturalist or primitive? Like a... He's got these songs that are so primitive that you can't hardly believe them, but they're true. And so she did an album of all covers of his music in the mid-90s. And I'm going to play actually two songs from that album today. Kathy McCarty also is in my favorite band of all time, Glass Eye, from Austin, Texas. So, you know, Daniel Johnston's also from Austin, Texas, or has lived there for 20, 25 years. So this is from Dead Dog's Eyeball. This is the song Living Life by Kathy McCarty.
And mop the hobble.
Kathy McCarty. That was from the album Dead Dog's Eyeball with Living Life. That's a Daniel Johnston song that she covered. Whole album is all Daniel Johnston songs. So I'm going to cover this topic, and here's the deal. If I get too choked up to continue, we're going to bail into another song from that same album. So, this is a trick I've learned from my days in radio, is always have an out queued up, ready to go in case you get into trouble. And there is irony in the title of that album was just coincidental. That's the song I wanted to play. But here's the deal. If you read my text weblog, you know this. Not everybody that listens to this does. Earlier this month, about 2 weeks now, we buried our dog, Gracie. And, you know, I will not dwell on this a whole lot because, you know, I've heard other people in the podcast era, people who I like and who I listen to have lost pets, and they talk about them. And I know anybody who does not love this animal doesn't have the same, you know, hearing somebody talk about something. It's like hearing somebody, you know, lose a loved relative you never met. You feel for them, but it's not visceral to you. And you know, I appreciate that. And, you know, I'll just get this off my chest. This is more, you know, it's off the top of my head, and honestly, I don't, you know, it's kind of like this whole show is kind of like a rehab assignment because I've been on the DL with grief. But so our dog was 15 and a half years old, so that's an old dog, and it's not surprising that things happened, but it is and it isn't, because 1 week before we lost her, I wouldn't, you know, I mean, she's an old dog, but, you know, she doesn't, you'd have to sometimes catch her. She'd try to jump up on the couch, and she wouldn't quite make it, and sometimes she would, like, fall ass over tea kettle off and look kind of sheepish or doggish or whatever you would say, sheepdogish. And, you know, so stuff like that has been happening for years, but I didn't really think that there was any reason why she didn't have another year or two or three or five left in her. I mean, she's pretty healthy, all things considered. And so over the weekend on a Sunday, she was throwing up and we didn't know what was going on. Monday morning, I take her to the vet. So at this point, we get a dog with an upset stomach. Take her to the vet. Now, she's previously, like 6 months ago, we put her on her kidneys were weak-ish. And put her on a special food that has less protein, so there's less stuff for the kidneys to metabolize. She's been on that for, you know, 6 months. The vet kind of examined her and says, I think the kidneys are failing. What we'll do is we'll hydrate her with an IV all day, pick her up at the end of the day, or you can leave her overnight. And then maybe what we can do is manage this with fluids and you can give her subcutaneous injections and, you know, we can work with it that way. You know, kind of flush out the stuff the kidneys aren't taking care of. Okay, that's Monday morning. Pick her up Monday night. You know, she's obviously not feeling great, but, you know, we're waiting for this kind of treatment to work. Take her back Tuesday. The vet says, you know, do it again. By Wednesday, when we pick her up, the vet says, this is not where you... And in the meantime, there has been results of a blood test. It says that essentially the kidney... It's not that the kidneys are failing. It's that the kidneys essentially have failed. By Wednesday, the vet says, you know, this is... You're delaying the inevitable. You know, it's nothing will ever get better from this. It's kind of like a treading water maneuver. As late as Wednesday, early Wednesday evening, I was thinking, you know, let's just keep going. Let's buy ourselves some time. You know, let's just do this. Let's do the subcutaneous injections through the weekend, and maybe Monday we'll do something. Well, even over the course of Wednesday, we talked about it, and we decided, you know, what would be the point? She's out, and Wednesday night, what really sealed the deal, even if we had made the other decision, she was so obviously miserable. So Thursday morning, I got up at 4:30 or 5. I got up before dawn and went out by flashlight and dug a grave in the backyard. We have got this Zen garden. It's got a little archway and, you know, a little trellis going to a little secluded garden thing. And we never go back there, but the dog loved to go back there. So we decided that is the place for her. So I got up, dug the grave, we take her, we put her down. I've never had an animal put down myself. You know, I was always a kid, I was never there. I'd never seen the process. It's really amazing So we're sitting there, we're petting her. She's, you know, up on the thing, and they said, the vet said, "Are you ready?" She had been getting an IV. She still got the little IV thing. So he just stuck the thing in the little IV socket dealy. Said, "Are you ready?" Gave her the injection. 5 seconds later, that was it. It was unbelievable. She just sort of laid down. And so when they say going to sleep, that's not really a metaphor. You know, it's pretty real, you know. And then it was kind of indistinguishable from any kind of sleep. And that was it. And so give me 1 second here. So I'm trying very hard not to dwell on this, like, hour, right? That you know, hour. We had 15 and a half wonderful years with this dog. And one shitty fucking week. And I'm trying to focus on the good 15 years and thinking about stuff like she was the rottenest puppy. The fact that she had 15 years was amazing because there were multiple times when she was a puppy that I considered beating her to death right there. And in fact, when she was a puppy, she had what was, I think, diagnosed as, I can't remember if it was kennel cough or distemper. We had the advice when she was probably 4 or 5 months old to put her down then by this vet who I should have put down. And we didn't buy him. We didn't believe his diagnosis. We took her to a different vet who said, no, that's not the case. Like, if we had listened to this guy, none of this would have ever happened. So, you know, we kind of, in the back of our minds, we have the thought that she had cheated death once, but now you can't do that forever. And, you know, we got this dog when we were young. I mean, I was like 23 when we got this dog. And it's not as if we were pet owners or, you know, ownership is not necessarily the right way to describe it, you know, kind of pet friends. And 23 when this dog came to live with us, and it's been with us essentially my entire adult life, you know. This is my 178th show. I've probably done 80 or 90 of them with her sitting right here at my feet. And it's just sort of tough, the idea that I got to face this life without her. So, it's enough of this. Okay, grievances. Kathy McCarty. Goodbye, lonely hearts drawing
I can't be a lover, then I'll be a pest. Yes, I will.
Grievances from the album Dead Dog's Eyeball, Kathy McCarty. I hadn't realized when I queued it up how much relevance there was in that song. Mainly, the line that kind of has hit me lately is I pulled out the coffin and crawled in, pulled out the casket and crawled in, because I certainly felt like that. Sort of wish I had jumped in the hole at multiple times lately. And I'm going to quit talking about this subject because I cannot continue. And you might actually see sense in this why. There's been, part of it has just been, you know, depression and grief and not giving one shit about most things of my life. But, you know, it's one of these things where I can't do the show without talking about it, and I don't want to talk about it, and I can't talk about it. And, you know, this is how one gets vapor locked in life. And here's what I've noticed about doing these shows. And doing the podcast is a lot like going to the gym and working out. When you're doing it like every day, or you're doing it regularly, it feels so good when you do it. And you feel nervous when you miss a day. But if you miss a couple days and you go a while without it, then it actually starts to feel like work to go back and do it. You know, it feels wrong to not do it. And then at some point you flip and it feels, you know, it's a threshold to be crossed the other way. And now you got to go and do it again. And it's like, I don't want to go to the gym. I just want to lie on the couch. And so top all this off by the fact that most of this week, like starting Sunday, I've been unbelievably sick. Like Sunday was the sickest I've been in years and years. Woke up in the middle of the night, you know, I don't need to get graphic, but bad stuff was happening. Let's put it in a metaphor. Let's euphemize it a little. If my body were a hot air balloon, it decided I needed to throw ballast from both sides of the gondola. It's one of those things. That was that. And then all week long, I've just been not quite right. But we're going out of town in a couple hours. But I just wanted to get this show in, wanted to squeeze it out, because I just feel so wrong and not doing them for so long. And on top of that, I don't know. I haven't looked up the exact day, but this may be my 2-year anniversary. So this is the most miserable, shitty anniversary show ever, but that is the way it goes sometimes. I have other stuff I wanted to talk about, but I think, you know, I may just keep this really short, partly because I don't have a whole hell of a lot of time to do the show and review the show and push it up, because like I say, in a couple hours we're getting in a car, we're going to a high school reunion. One of the things that I want to talk about at more length, I was one of the people who kind of weaseled in early enough. Sorry about that. Phones started ringing everywhere. So, as I was saying, I was one of the people who weaseled in early enough to get one of the review copies of Chris Anderson's book, The Long Tail. I gave something like 100 copies to bloggers. And so I essentially owe a blog write-up on this, and I'm going to write it up. I'm also going to talk about it here. It was an interesting experience reading it, because I've been following his weblog as he wrote it, you know, and I don't think I ever read the original article. I can't remember if I did or not. I haven't read the paper magazine in years. If I did, it was online, and I may have read the original article online. But having followed the kind of the discussion over the blog and, reading his blog posts and reading some of his analyses over the years, the book was both more and less than what I was expecting. Partly because a lot of it had been kind of covered, and there wasn't really that much that hadn't been brought to it before. And it was kind of compressing what had filtered in over a year, year and a half, you know, into a couple days. And that was an interesting experience, but in a lot of ways I had already, you know, I'd already bought in, and so there was nothing new to sell me, if you get, you know, intellectually. I already subscribed to his thesis. And I took a few notes as I went through. There were a few interesting aspects. You know, I was trying to dig for relevance to citizen media. And citizen media were brought up multiple times as use cases for the long tail. One of the things, and I might actually still try to get an interview with Chris Anderson, one of the things I'd really like to talk to him about, and I've not seen covered much, the dark side, the dark flip side of the long tail. And not the tail itself, but the fact that now everybody knows about the tail. And I've talked about this before, you know, in this podcast without the long tail framework around it. But the dark flip side is that when everybody knows the money is to be made in the long tail, and that you know, the money is to be made in the aggregate of lots of things that may not sell a lot individually, suddenly everybody realizes that the to be one of the artists who doesn't sell a lot out on the long tail doesn't make you a lot of money. But to be the Amazon or the, you know, the eBay or the Netflix that's selling the artist out on the long tail, they make money. So everyone realizes there's less money in the work and more money in the aggregation. And we have seen this big time in the podcast world, where people realize if you're going to make money, you're not going to really, chances are, make any money doing a podcast. You know, now you've got to get the popular podcast, you know, that hits it big. You know, you've got to be Don and Drew. But if you can form some kind of network and aggregate them, and you skim a little bit off of, you know, tens or dozens or hundreds of podcasts, then you're going to make the money. And so suddenly there's this King of the Hill game for everybody to be the highest level aggregator, because the highest level aggregator is going to make the money. So, let me get ahead of you. And this is where you get the stuff like the feed jacking. You know, ideally, everyone would like to be hosting the feed you're subscribed to. And, you know, and I'm not immune to this. I have an aggregator of sorts, right? AmigoFish is sort of in this game. I mean, I've done this too. And so it just sort of, it inverts the world. But the funny thing is, that if you looked at it that way, and you say, okay, where is the economic impetus? You know, what's driving what? Nobody, I mean, from an economic standpoint, it makes no sense to actually sit down and do the show. It makes more sense to sit down and try to form a network. But that doesn't stop, you know, 20 and 30 and 40,000 people from actually doing it. So that says to me that there's something different. I mean, one of the things that you have to include on all this is the extra economic factors that, you know, nobody's doing this because of the money. You know, the number of, despite the fact that there are companies who have that in their friggin' slogan, the number of people who quit their day jobs podcasting, I believe I could still count them on one hand. You know, not counting the ones who started companies and made their company their job, but the ones who by doing part, and I'm not even also talking about service organizations, somebody who does a podcast and that podcast makes them enough money to quit their day job. Can there be more than a couple? I can actually only think of one, really two. So obviously that's not the goal. And this all ties in with my talk that I'm giving next month about, you know, what drives you? Why do you do this? Doing it for love. And this is something that I really want to get. I mean, got like 5 weeks now to really get to the bottom of this. And there was a little bit of a kerfuffle on weblog. I posted to Doc Searles, you know, a couple days ago. And Seth Finkelstein, who, you know, I have heard of the man, left me a comment where I was basically saying how big media, when they cover citizen media, it's always pissy and condescending, and they never seem to get the idea of why you would do this. And your goal is not to have 500,000 or 1 million listeners. That you can have much more modest goals and still be wildly happy at the results you get. And he kind of gave me some shit. He's like, that bloggers are so full of themselves and podcasters are so full of themselves that we think we're this thing that can't be understood by big media. And I kind of, my riposte was, it's easy to understand. It's just that big media chooses, willfully or not, to not understand it. Every story I've seen in the last, I don't know, year and a half about podcasting talks about how, you know, obviously since they're not getting big audiences, you know, any individual show is not getting a big audience, then obviously, you know, they're going to give up eventually. Bullshit. You're just fucked. That's wrong. Now, I certainly Don't fault them for having that mindset. I personally have a hard time talking reasonably about the economic benefits of all software development going to India and China. Because to admit that that has value says, hey, take the money out of my pocket because I don't have value. You know, my value can be done better by other people. And, you know, or even admitting something towards that direction is kind of admitting that I might, my days might be numbered, you know. And, you know, admitting that somebody else can bring more value to certain things than me is tough. And I don't do it very well, and I wouldn't really expect big media to do it very well. I mean, in a certain sense, this is all kind of like Tai Chi, right? We all know what move we're going to make next, and we just sort of do it and watch it. You know, it's deterministic. You know what's going to happen, because it's the only way it can go. So I don't blame anybody for it, but it is annoying, and it's bullshit. And so that's the thing I really want to be exploring in this podcast, in the blog, you know, for the month of September, leading up to Portable Media Expo. What drives us? What drives me? What drives you? Why have I felt so nervous the last couple of weeks not doing a show? I mean, is it sheer... am I worried I'm going to cede my place in your aggregator? I mean, there is a little bit of worry about that. I've felt a little bit of opportunity pressure for a year and a half now. You know, there's the era when it was fun and just a lark, and then it stopped being a sheer lark. And I have always felt like I have not been exploiting this to its fullest. And so then you see kind of knuckleheads and dipshits. This happens in everything, by the way. You see knuckleheads and dipshits who somehow are like getting more success than you. And you have to say to yourself, and this happens with writers. It's always a kick in the teeth to see someone who you think, you know, in your heart of hearts, you think, even if you're kind of a magnanimous sort, you think, that person is not as good as me at this. And yet they're achieving more. There is no fucking justice in this world. You know, certainly lots of writers have seen inferior writers sell better and make more money and be more popular. I only got two words to say about that. Da Vinci Code. God damn. Can there be a worse written book to sell 50 million copies? Jesus. God. Anyway, I think we've hit the wall on this one. Or shall I say, I have hit the wall on this one. But that's the thinking. And so this is the kind of, this is the place I'm at and kind of lay it out. If you've got thinking like this, I am still not just soliciting, I'm still begging for feedback on it. dslusher@gmail.com. You can leave me an audio comment and mail it to me. You can Skype a voicemail me at AmigoFish Support. I don't have Skype voicemail on my main one, but AmigoFish Support. If you send Skype voicemail to that thing about this, I'll play it on the show. But please keep it like a minute and a half under if you want to get it played. They'll all be listened to and kind of serve as grist for the mill otherwise. Let's play a song. And if you notice, the songs are kind of pepping up as they go, kind of following that... following the kind of healing process. This is a song I honestly have forgotten where I got it in the kind of blur of the last month. It's a band called Choose Your Own Adventure, which just jumped out at me. The name, this is the title track of the album Let 'Em Work, Let 'Em Live. And this is kind of like the same sort of thing as I get from Bullet Called Life. This is kind of retro-y, you know, modern sounding yet retro-y classic rocky jam. So I'll try to find something about it and link to them on the webpage. And again, I don't know where the hell this came from. Maybe from Large Hearted Boy or some kind of MP3 blog. I just found a link to it and just downloaded it. It's kind of fairly random how I discovered it, but I really love this song. Let them work, let them live. Let's go. There you go. Let them work, let them live from Choose Your Own Adventure. Get in, get out, rock your balls off. Nice and concise. Reminds me a lot of that Wolf Mother, too, the kind of, you know, Zeppelin-y sounding retro modern rock, you know. What's not to like about that? Okay, friends and neighbors, this is, I'm going to call it here and wrap it up. In a lot of ways, this is like a rehab assignment. You know, I've had rotator cuff surgery, I've been on the DL, and now I'm pitching in AAA. So, you know, the goals of this show are modest, mainly to get in and do one and get back, you know. It's hard to shake off the slough of despond, you know, that black curtain of despair that just envelops you and you don't want to do a goddamn thing. That's honestly, I've spent more time just lying on the couch just wanting to do nothing. So doing something good or bad fights that, and you know, we'll try to make it good next time. All right, any feedback, dslusher@gmail.com. Leave your feedback at evilgeniuschronicles.org. The show notes will be there, links to the bands will be there, and that's how we do it. Thank you for listening, thank you for being patient, and thank you for half an hour of your time. I appreciate you, and I'm glad I could spend some time with you, and I promise I'll do it again sooner. Bye.